Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. Our final sponsor is the book Reclaiming the Classroom, which provides a roadmap for teachers to get back to a position of power and respect and offers administrators advice on how to support and encourage their efforts. Check the book out at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
And I remember I had a professor that said that, you know, not making a decision is making a decision. Mm-hmm. And that was powerful for me to kind of, you know, think about that. I sometimes think that, you know, whenever there's a problem, there has to be action.
Today's guest is Dr. Neil Gupta, who's had a wonderful career in education. He's taught math. He's had a number of administrative positions at the local school level. He's even moved up to the district level, where he's been a director of assessment, director of curriculum, and now he's serving as the director of secondary education for Worthington City Schools. I met Dr. Neil Gupta through Lead Up Chat, which I've talked about extensively through the podcast and the blog. He offers practical advice for today's school leaders and has a great sense of humor. I'm so honored to bring to our listeners today Dr. Neil Gupta. So tell me a little bit about yourself. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
So I would have to say that, you know, there's a lot of people before me, and I actually you'll be seeing a blog post coming out in the next month. But it really talks about the idea, and I think it goes along with what you were saying about Lead Up Chat as far as kind of, you know, being the inspiration. That was my 2015 one word. And I really, you know, took a lot of time to think about that. And I thought about, you know, in this next stage, I'm about 15 years in as an administrator. And, you know, I started looking back and thought about all the different people that had kind of helped get me to where I was today. And there was just a lot of positive people around me, starting in high school. Obviously, my parents, you know, really sent the notion of education's important, but it's also about helping people in that philanthropic way. And then just, you know, guidance counselors and other administrators and teachers that came along and just got me excited about being around kids. And so, you know, that's kind of where the pathway first started. Just, you know, saw myself as somebody that just wanted to be around that energy. And it was really more about not teaching the subject as much as it was for me getting into the business sort of thing to really connect with kids. And then through that, just one door opened by another, just being able to network around. I think there was early on some investment of leaders that really thought about succession planning. You know, for a long time, people think about their own professional, personal, you know, growth, and they don't really think about that next stage. And I just happened to maybe be there at the right time and right place for there to be just really a group of solid leaders that were seasoned veterans. And so they allowed me to kind of come into the inner fold. They gave me a lot of encouragement, inspiration. I got early access to positions on the district leadership team when I was young, being sent to state, national workshops and conferences. And then through that, it just opened one door after the other. And I would have to say that through those experiences, it allowed me to network with other people. And I think that that's important in our profession. I think I was doing that way before there was Twitter and social media. Going to face-to-face conferences, not being afraid to pick up the phone and call people, not being afraid to, you know, hear about, you know, some great leaders in this state, you know, at the very beginning, and just to call them on the phone and start asking them questions. And I think that became easier for me, that when social media came, for me to be able to connect with people in a national and now international sense, just to not have that fear to go up to people, to share ideas. You know, maybe I've got one idea and they've got one idea and we exchange it. And then, you know, you add them to your phone and call them or ask them questions over email and just try to keep relationships at the forefront.
So let's stay there for a second with this idea of a network and social media. And like I shared with our listeners, you know, we met up through LeadUp Chat, but I know you're also involved with the Ohio Ed Chat. So can you just share a little bit about Ohio Ed Chat? When does that happen? And number two, people that are new to Twitter and growing their professional learning network through social media, what kind of tips and strategies do you have for folks?
Yeah. So first, you know, LeadUp Chat was definitely a place where I've been and continue to stay. You know, there's a lot of Ed Chats that are out there, and they're all wonderful, and you know, learn a lot of great things from them. But I think you know, when you start to look at how many are out there, you do have to start, I think, choosing and deciding to kind of really delve into and deepen and foster relationships. And so some of the leaders that are out there at LeadUp Chat were just that group for me. And so I encourage everybody to be out there, and I'll definitely be there on those Saturday mornings and welcome you. And then through that, I saw what Nathan Lang and Jeff Beal do at a national level, and it's tremendous. And when I see these other states having an Ed Chat, my heart kind of went out into a way of pride, you know, that we've got, Ohio's got a lot of great things going on. We've got some great leaders. So Jeremy Evans is a teacher in Ohio, and he was overseeing kind of the OH Ed Chat, and it needed a little bit of refreshing, some new blood into it. And so I got connected with Bobby Dodd, and I'm going to name drop some people just so that you can look for these people on Twitter. But Bobby Dodd and Ryan McLean and Craig Vroom were the other three that were in the Columbus area that are administrators. And so the five of us talked about it. We said, you know, what do we want to do for Ohio is we want to basically start to kind of, again, encourage, inspire, bring out some of the teachers and principals and administrators. And we're actually finding other people that are even outside of maybe the traditional K-12 education, and think about topics that would help to just support them in the work that they're doing and to just encourage and inspire them. So Wednesday nights at 9 p.m., it's hashtag OHEdChat. And the five of us, we just trade off each week and kind of looking at different areas of topics and things that we kind of see from the horizon of what's happening in Ohio, what's happening on at the national level, and then best practices. You talked about some of the tips that I would have would be, you know, I talked to a lot of people. It's interesting. A lot of people talk about how they are lurkers. It's real evident. Dan, for example, with you, I was able to find out about you right away, you know, but I'll still run into a lot of people that I'll talk to, and I don't know who they are, but they'll tell me I know who you are because I kind of watch you, I follow you, and you know, it's interesting how there's really a significant amount of people that do that, and they're on Twitter, they're watching you, they may not be actually in there, and that's a great first step, you know, for you just to kind of take a look and just kind of see what people are all about. Take a chance and learn from them, and then, you know, slowly kind of learn from people. The other tip that I hear is, and there's a lot of difference, and definitely I'd love to hear kind of some of the tools that you use, but early on I was using the regular twitter.com, and it would just fly through. You know, you try to kind of keep a conversation on an Ed Chat night, and you just couldn't keep track of the conversations, the questions, who was talking, and where things were going. So now there's some great, and I know you've got a link to some great instructions, like a guide on how to do it right. I use TweetDeck, which is just a way to organize a Twitter chat and keep things kind of in the forefront. Not feeling uneasy about asking who's moderating the chat for that night, because it may change. And so if you can at least kind of keep an eye on that specific person, you'll be able to keep an eye on where the questions go. So, you know, just jump into it. It's hard for 140 characters to kind of say something in a concise way, and nobody's got that down. We tend to just write our you know, concept, our content. I find out that I'm 20 words over, 20 characters over, and then I start deleting, you know, until I get into that sweet spot. And it helps us to be succinct. I think that's something in our jobs. We think about having elevator speeches. And so the transfer of that is When I do, when I talk with teachers, when I talk with parents and community members, sometimes I think about it in a Twitter kind of conversation of, you know, you only have a minute to talk to somebody, or in this, you know, situation, you only have a certain number of characters. So how do you want to say it? So this idea about prototyping and practicing on how to be succinct in what you say is important. And I think Twitter brings that out.
Yeah, definitely a great tool in terms of, I think, making you use more precise language. And I like what you said. You know, at some point, you got to step off the sidelines from watching to participating. And the way I want to package that for the audience is you're going to get way more out of Twitter chats or just leveraging the power of your professional learning networks the more you give. And so don't be one of those, I'm going to call you a weirdo, so I hope you don't offend, but don't be a weirdo that doesn't have a profile picture and you have just a Twitter egg. That's step number one. Put your face up there. You know, and if you want to do a cartoon, but get something that resembles a human being, because the point of this is to make connections and develop relationships. So do that and then start giving. Don't be somebody that watches from the sidelines. I've used TweetDeck in the past. Right now, you know, I use something like Hootsuite. I use Buffer to schedule tweets, but Hootsuite, you can like TweetDeck. Definitely save a column, a hashtag. I use lists quite a bit on Twitter, so I've added you, everybody from Lead Up Chat to my education list. Because my feed, you know, at this point, I have a few thousand followers and people that I follow, so it's just really hard to keep it very organized, but lists definitely help. You mentioned that I created an ultimate guide, so listeners of the podcast, if you haven't checked out the blog, I have betterleadersbetterschools.com. Twitter dash for educators, and that's just your how-to guide with a video. But Neil, you know, I really love if you use the Twitter website, if you go to the search function and go from top to live, that will help you just see only the, like, for example, I'll type in hashtag lead up chat and I only see lead up chat tweets during that time. So not sure if you're using that. And I mentioned in our Voxer group, the app, which for some reason I'm blanking on, Tweetbot, I think. Let me double check that really quick. Yeah, but Tweetbot is super, super powerful as well. And they have an app for the Mac, your iPad, and the phone. They sell them differently, so they, you know, can get a little expensive, I guess. But that's kind of a first world problem. So let's stay there for a second. I was reading your blog, and I really enjoyed this one. I think you wrote this after your one word. But, you know, you're talking about you're painting the picture of your family and, you know, maybe the fridge isn't close enough to the couch, or you said there's not enough room on the DVR. These are first world problems. And you shared this anecdote, which I'd like you to share if you remember it. I could help you out if you don't. But that really impacted me. I love the wisdom in what your superintendent told you to give you perspective. And then I encourage people to check out your blog as well. I'll link it up in the show notes just because it's filled with so much wisdom. And then you talked about the five things to get perspective. So, can you share that anecdote?
Yeah. And I, just to kind of give you a little bit of background, you know, what happens is you know, just informally, I'll get walking away from a conference or a workshop. And like I said, it goes back to you know, there's a few, but I, like I said, I don't mind it. You know, I talked with some other national ed leaders, and we were talking about how one day, you know, I'm learning always from somebody else. And you know, I don't mind. I love picking up the phone and asking people. And anyway, so at a conference, you know, I may get a couple, you know, people that will ask for my business card and ask me, you know, if they can call me for questions and things like that. And so, you know, when I strike up conversations, especially with young administrators, you know, that's how sometimes the litmus of how a blog post comes out, because obviously if one person's asking about it, then, you know, maybe it's something, you know, I reflect back on and say, that's kind of where I was in my first couple years of administration. And that's probably where other people are also. And so kind of it drew me back to a story, and I kind of had shared it with that person. And then I put that in my post, is that, you know, there's a major issue, and I don't even remember really what the issue was about. But as a young administrator, you know, everything is, you know, kind of, you know, an emergency, a type one emergency. And I remember just pacing around of our central office. I was right in the central office right after my second year as an administrator. And so very young, very inexperienced, I don't mind saying that, but very hungry and wanting to do the right thing. And our superintendent, a seasoned veteran, was coming on at his normal time. You know, he wasn't late or anything. He probably had three meetings before 8 o'clock anyway. And he walked in and you know, I was tense and rushed into his office and said, you know, we've got a problem. And before I got a chance to you know, tell him what the problem was, he could, I think, tell by my face, knew my demeanor, knew that I constantly have these problems that are always these, level 5 emergencies. And, you know, he said, let's step back for a second before you tell me and just kind of let's put things in perspective. There's 7 million people that won't even care about it. You know, your community may care about it, but, you know, putting it in perspective of there's the world and then there's probably what's going on in your world. And, you know, let's kind of first minimize or at least try to figure out, and not for the most part, but let's kind of figure out what that looks like. And then talked about just this idea about, is this decision or is this initiative or whatever you're bringing to me, is it going to affect us for the next 10 years? And as he started talking, it helped to kind of just ease down my you know, demeanor, and I was able to kind of laugh a little bit about it. And, you know, just kind of, I felt a little foolish in a good way, that what I was bringing forth was something that didn't need to come. And, you know, I think that happens right now. I think in administration, probably even more with email and things like that, that we think that when there's a problem, it's a big problem and it's fast and we need a fast solution. And I remember I had a professor that said that, you know, not making a decision is making a decision. Mm-hmm. And that was powerful for me to kind of, you know, think about that. I sometimes think that, you know, whenever there's a problem, there has to be action. And, you know, I'm constantly amazed how after sometimes waiting 24 hours, you know, one of the comments that I said was sometimes waiting overnight really just fixes things. You know, I had an administrator that had told me, I on purpose, and it sounds bad, I on purpose didn't respond within 24 hours to somebody. And it was killing me inside. It was killing me. And finally, the next day, I contacted the person. The person said, you know what? That problem that I had yesterday, I don't have it anymore. I kind of worked it out myself out with it. And, you know, I think that gives permission. You know, I think the big thing is, it's not that procrastination is a good thing, but giving people time and a space to think in a different way does help situations.
Yeah, I love what you say there about waiting, too. It just makes me think of wait time in the classroom. And if we jump into it too quickly, you do the heavy lifting and trying to figure out the problem for that person. And so if we don't want to do that for our students, why do that for our leaders? And I love that, you know, you shared that. That's really a gem for our listeners today. So give yourself permission to not always be tied to your email and respond to everything right away. I think, you know, me personally, I advocate for boundaries around email and only checking during certain times of the day so that you could be more efficient at work. But on top of that, too, you don't necessarily have to respond to everything during that hour that you're checking as well. And let people figure things out. If the problem still exists, maybe it is an emergency, you know, and then you could step in at that time.
You know, I'll say that I'll bet 95% of whoever's watching this follows this one digital leader that I know real well. And you'll all be surprised that I'm talking, this person's national, international, digital leader, probably got 15,000 followers. And people would say, yep, that person, I won't give his name, but people will say that person's a digital leader. And the funny thing is he does not have his email on his phone. You know, and I'll tell you, that right there says a lot about, you know, how he approaches his work and how he approaches his family and his personal time and how he approaches situations, about how, you know, things that are on the phone when you're trying to respond sometimes, you know, don't get communicated properly, rather than going back to your laptop and, you know, typing it. So
that's powerful right there. And challenges me, you know, Neil, I took off all the notifications and I thought I was big time. I still have it on my phone. This guy doesn't even have it on his phone. I normally ask this towards the end of the interview, but you brought it up. So how do you protect boundaries between work, you know, what you do for fun and family as a busy and, you know, highly effective leader?
You know, I don't do a good job of that. You know, that is a big, huge confession right here. And I think that is something that, you know, again, Lead Up Chat has helped me with, as far as in the month of November and December, they did a big series on white space. And it's really this concept of just finding that time where you're in the flow, you know, and you're finding your time to not necessarily unplug, but just finding your time to enjoy and not feeling like you're strapped and doing all the things that you're doing. And that's on digital media stuff. And that's also just, you know, in the grind of other things. But I struggle with that. And I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, are in that place when we start to have those conversations, because some people say, you know, you know, you're on there all the time. You know, what gives? And unfortunately, family is the first to give. I would say that the white space, I'd go back to the Storify for lead up chat and take a look at that. And there's some great practical things that you could kind of check out that some people have done. But I would say that for me, what's really helped is, I told my family, hold me accountable, you know, kind of help me unplug, but it's easy to let them down. And I'm saying that, you know, it's easy to tell them, oh, guys, just this one chat. But I would have to, and I'm going to call her out on this. Our chief academic officer, who I directly report to in my district, Jennifer Ween, she has been tremendous to help me do that. And I think that, so I guess what I'm saying is somebody professionally, and I'm blessed to have somebody, I think, in my district that helps me to realize that. My superintendent, Trent Bowers, is the same way, really just believes in you're a better person if you take that time to spend it with your family, take time to actually take care of your own physical health, and that's eating healthy, and that's exercising, and you come back and you're better. So on all ends. And you know, we have to all realize this is what we're getting into is not a sprint. We sometimes think that. We think, let me get through that last email. Let me get through that last, you know, set of envelopes that have just kind of been thrown on my desk. But it's always going to be there. And so we need to kind of give ourselves that permission to be able to kind of, you know, turn it off and go spend time with family and know that it's a marathon.
Yeah, the work will always be there, listeners. So definitely, you know, put it away and come back to it at another time. Neil, is there a thing that your chief academic officer actually says or does to help you?
She, you know, we talk about, you know, sometimes it's just, there's a busy week with, just meetings that are going on and schedules and things like that. So I guess what I'm saying is finding somebody that's going to give you accountability that, that, you know, you won't buckle on. I mean, maybe it's your family and you can't buckle on them, but I'm telling you that for me, I buckle on my family. I make them buckle. But with, you know, people that in my district, they hold me accountable. But when we sit down, we have conversations about our schedule, and what it's about is saying, what are the priorities? Because that's what tends to happen is we sometimes judge and aren't sure really what the priorities are and what needs to be done first and what needs to be done second. And, you know, I think she, in her experience, is able to kind of help me through just conversation to say, this is important, get this done first. So she's still saying, this is important. This one can wait a little bit. You can have this time to kind of work on those things. And she even says, get out to buildings and go, you know, I'm at the central office level and you need to clear your head. You got to remember why you're doing things. So, you know, get out in hallways, go sit in classrooms, go talk to students, and then come back on, you know, at this time, and you got to be ready for this. And, you know, like I said, I think that that's been helpful. And my superintendent's been the same way, just very encouraging, professional growth. And, it's just one of my biggest, inspirations of just kind of wanting to work for him, want to work hard for the district because I want to elevate and make him look good.
So I like this discussion about boundaries, you know, and I like also that you're sharing some of the insights that you've gained over the years now as a school leader. What else, knowing what you know now, would you tell a novice principal about leading his or her building?
You know, it constantly comes up to, and actually this is a conversation that I had with my wife today, so it also works on the marital end. And so if you keep things happy there too, you'll be even a better leader. But, you know, really talking about making sure you know what the goals are, making sure that you've clearly identified the goals and you're transparent about them and that you're in a place where, and again, this is another blog post that's been stirring in my head about no compromise. You know, I think too often when situations happen because there's been confusion over, and when there's that lack of understanding or confusion, that's when then other things seem to creep in. But if we are able to be very clear on what we want, and again, that's now even at a building level, and we share those goals and we keep them up front, you know, with everybody, and the staff knows it, and the parents know it, and the students know it, and then that becomes your litmus test. That becomes that filter that everything goes back to when you're having conversations or have to make decisions. Then it doesn't have to be that people always like it, but at least they understand it because it's been up front. But I think sometimes where I think leaders fail is they haven't sat down and really reflected on these are what's important, or this is what the goals are, or this is what my my core beliefs are or our core beliefs are in the district or building. And then when decisions are made, they just don't seem to match up all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem comes in. But if we're clear about that and then we keep sticking back to it again, it helps even for the decision-making process to be more clear. What I really appreciate about the district that I'm in right now is in a moment in time when I'm approached with a decision, I don't feel like I have to run back to the superintendent to ask permission. But because he's very clearly laid out what these are, I'm able to make those decisions in a moment's time of something else and know that's exactly what he would have thought or he would have said at the time. And so what it does is it increases productivity.
You know, in the Voxer Group, I've been sharing about this book. I've been reading The Enemies of Excellence. And I hope I'm looking forward to this blog post that you're about to write in terms of getting clear on goals. But what I already know, like, leaders are going to be asking, well, how do I do that, right? How do I identify what's most important to me? Now, I only read through the book once. I underlined some things, jotted down some notes, but I think maybe a bonus episode or something or your blog post, if we could offer listeners, obviously, like how the process that you go through to identify those goals, that could be so valuable because that's the thing. You talked about people are making these decisions and it's kind of maybe out of the blue or something like that. It's not necessarily aligned to the specific mission of your school or district or who you are even as an individual. And that's why getting clear on those goals and not compromising on your core beliefs is so important. Let's flip it though, right? When you do stuff out of character, you get yourself in trouble at times. And I really appreciate when guests can share a leadership mistake they made and what they learned from it. So what do you consider one of your worst leadership mistakes and what did you learn, Neil?
Yeah, just pick one. I can pick many. I'd say early on in one of the districts that I was in, I think it's sometimes thinking that school districts work outside of or in isolation from the community and that educators know best. You know, and so what happens by that is sometimes, you know, there was a decision that a group of us had made early on. We looked at the data and actually data needs to come into the conversation about goal setting and initiatives. And you take a look at that. But we took a look at the data and we said, this is the approach that we need to take. And then we went out and we basically told the community early on, this is what needs to happen. The fail in that was that even if you're right, you've got to bring people through the process. And again, too often we find out that things are done in esoteric way. And it's not done on purpose. We do it because maybe a decision hasn't been made yet. We don't want to alarm people. We're just looking at some things right now. And so we for the best of intentions, we try to keep that group tight. And because we haven't made a decision yet, we try to keep things under wraps because we don't want to waste people's time or bring confusion. But what that also does is when a decision comes out then and there hasn't been people that have come through the process, given opportunity for input, given an opportunity to have a say for it, it doesn't happen. And I think on top of that, when there are community beliefs or things that have to happen that do impact the community, the school's got to be cognizant of that. So again, the district that I'm in right now is very tight-knit. Worthington City Schools in Worthington, Ohio. It's neat that I feel like I'm an anthropologist. I'm about, 8 months into this new job, and I still feel like I come and I learn. And not that I'm not part of the community, but I still feel like I love just sitting back and watching the different cultures. And I used that word different cultures once, and somebody said, what do you mean by that? And I said, because there's lots of cultures in this community. Of the way the neighborhoods are established or the sports or the parent groups and PTOs and the grocery store and things like that and really trying to understand where the community is. And this is a very tight-knit community, and that's what I love so much about it, because I'm a small town boy myself, or have that feel for a small town boy. And to know that the district has that belief that they're willing to be very transparent in the process as much as the decision part of it is important. And again, that's where I see a lot of people and groups and other things miss up. So at a building level, principals that aren't really working. If PTO, it may be, you know, you may have a PTO, but it may not be the change makers. And people, you know what I mean when I say that. So just to kind of check the box and say, well, I checked with my PTO president and they said it was okay, or they spoke for me, may not be the right thing. And you know, holding a parent night and only two people showing up and saying, well, I held a parent night, you know, they didn't come. That doesn't matter either. It's about really engaging people in the conversations and really understanding that, you know, this is a shared process.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. And today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goebel. Effective learning happens because of the relationship built between a teacher and a student, not due to government mandates and high-stakes testing. The new book, Reclaiming the Classroom, offers a case for today's teacher to regain control of K-12 education and change the conversation around learning. Despite the inaccurate, negative rhetoric about teachers in America, there's still a way to reinstate teachers as the most vital source of classroom innovation and change the trajectory of K-12 education. You can grab this book at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
Do you have any tips for engaging parents then? This is almost a personal question for me, but I know that it'll benefit the listeners. That would be, I think, the area that I have the least amount of experience. And I haven't, to be honest, I haven't seen it done well yet. And I want that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. There's no magic, I guess. It's just really, I think, going to where they are. You know, I think elementary has a easier time. I mean, you know, for the most part, as the kids get older, I think parents tend to think that, you know, they've been around school enough or they get it, or lives and busyness of things happen. So I would just say that really just be invisible. If this is the principle, it's just really be invisible and really being attentive for two-way communication. I hate that it happens, but I've got a couple PTO meetings, you know, later this week that I'm going to attend, and they start at 7 p.m. And I hate it, but if it's where parents are, that they can get home and they can get over there, that works. I mean, if we start to say, well, my schedule would work better as an administrator that they come over at 5 because I could just do that at the end of the day and nobody shows up. You know, then we start to get, you think, well, I just need to, you know, then they're not invested. Well, that may not be the case. I know that there's a middle school and they found out through some conversations that mornings work out. Our superintendent has coffees that he sets up and they're at different restaurants, Panera Breads and Starbucks in around the community. At a different place each month, trying again to try to keep people in those pockets, helping them wherever they may be. I think I don't want to make it sound like a bait and switch, but and you can't do this all the time. But you know, really helping parents to understand what it's in it for them. I mean, if it's just kind of lecturing them and giving them information, well, then that could have been an email or a podcast or you know something that you do. If it's really about engaging with them and getting their input and helping them be a part of the process and where they walk away feeling like their voice was heard, and then a week or two later they see that the conversation that happened here, their input that was given, and you know came to a result 2 weeks later, we'll build their confidence and let them know that you're open to it, and definitely making them feel that they're part of that rather than just you know that it's an action plan that for you to carry out. I mean, obviously a principal doesn't want all that; they want everybody to be involved.
That's good. I like the challenge of if it's just something where I'm dumping information, you know, that could be an email, podcast, webinar, something like that. But if it's truly to get feedback and engage, then it's figuring out when, and that I might need to be flexible with my schedule, I heard you say, and where too, meeting people where they're at. Right. So I love those tips. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Neil, tell us about a class we should add to our schools, but it's not currently taught. So you can't say STEM, you can't say computer science, anything like that, hot topics, but what would you add? And you don't know that it actually exists in our nation.
Right. You know, I think it's something that keeps coming up, and maybe it even comes up more because, you took some easy ones. And I see engineering out there. I saw my son, my 11-year-old, had some early access on to 3D printers, and it was just seeing light bulbs click on when you see kindergartners and first graders and second graders. So I'm bummed I can't say that, but I do. I've got a sister-in-law, and you know, she's got these little kids that are about 3 years old, and you know, I can't believe that they're she's got a 2-year-old, and he can, you know, just whip around that iPad like you wouldn't believe. So really as much engineering stuff as possible. Now I know I can't use that one. The other wheelhouse that I have a very personal interest in addition to the STEM aspects is international perspectives. And really as I think about the idea about, you know, what life is going to be like, you know, by the time, like I said, my fifth grader gets out into that real world. My oldest son right now is taking Chinese, and he's very passionate about that. And somewhere in his head, he has this idea that he has to go through all the levels of Chinese that he can. And I love it. I don't know where it came from. I love it. But regardless, you know, I hope it's not just the language that he thinks he needs to have. I hope he understands that it's about the culture and having an empathy that's there. And I'm hoping we embed empathy everywhere. But the cultural empathy, I think, is important, and I think it needs to be taught overtly. I think that, you know, we're very ethnocentric, and I think if we could just understand how to approach people. As an example, I remember, you know, I come from an Indian background, and so I was in a district, and there was a family. I happened to be going into a building, and a family was enrolling their child, and you could tell, I think they had just come from India, and they looked very apprehensive about it, and they didn't speak much English. And to be honest with you, I don't speak much Hindi in the first place. But I went over, it was the child, the mother, and the grandmother. And I walked over to the grandmother, and I went over and I touched her feet. That's just a sign of respect. It's something that we do in our culture. And when I did that, she instantly became, you know, more settled. She became instantly better. And I could just tell it was just kind of something to help her understand that we're here for her, and we're gonna make this a good transition for her and her family. And so, you know, there's those little subtleties, or maybe there's overt subtleties or overt things that happen that we can do to help understand and teach our kids about that. And I don't want to say when they go to business, how to handshake and things like that. I'm just talking in general. My wife is a nurse, and so that she took a class, for example, on, you know, if you think about it, I never thought about it before, but, you know, approaching somebody from different countries, and she's a female, and walking into a room, and how do you touch somebody, and how do you talk to them, and how do you approach them? That was a whole class for her, and I remember just watching in amazement that I'm so glad that she had that, because I think it helped her to be more. Because I think sometimes we don't really think about that. We walk into a classroom, and all of a sudden we've got so many nationalities represented, and we embrace it, and that's such a great thing. But sometimes we go into things, and we accidentally do things that offend our kids or our parents, and we don't do it on purpose, but there's still an impact to that. I wrote a blog post about, I don't know, I guess if it was a blog post, we'd had a lot of conversations about really knowing our kids' names. You know, I don't like when somebody from another country is given the you know, just call me Jack or just call me Sue. I don't want to. I mean, I make it my goal to call them by their real name, and to respect, and even try to, you know, and I'll mess up. And I talked to somebody, and they said that they've got a jar in their classroom with candy, and every time that they mispronounce a child's name, they'll put a piece of candy in there, and at the end, they'll, you know, dole out the candy. And I think it's fun. It shows light of the situation, and obviously we have to be aware of, you know, of the environment and the culture of our classrooms, and making sure we're treating our kids with respect. But it means a lot if we do those things of knowing how to talk to families, talking to them on the phone, calling them on the phone when they come into our classrooms, or if we go to their house. I know home visits are important, or when we see them at different events. But I think we have to get into a place where we're understanding culture.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only does it mean a lot, I think it means everything. And something that I've pulled apart from just this interview with you, I just want to honor you, encourage you, Neil, because you're not about Neil, you're about others. And that so clearly comes through speaking with you. And I appreciate that quite a bit. So thank you for that. You know, just of course, you had a cultural insider why touching the grandma's foot would put her at ease. But there's no reason that anybody can't do a little bit of investigative work and find out what is meaningful to all our students and in the families. And I agree 110% about the name thing. We have a new teacher at Brooks. I hope he sticks around. I think he's a hard worker and a good teacher. And he has a last name that probably has maybe three vowels and about 20 consonants. So you look at it and you're like, whoa, you know, what am I going to do with this? Now, the default, the easy thing is to say Mr. K.
Right.
Right. But I said, Alex, tell me how to pronounce your name. And he almost wouldn't tell me. It's okay. Nobody gets it. You can call me Mr. K. I said, no, buddy, I'm an educated guy. I'm pretty sure if I practice it, I'm going to get it. And I wrote it down phonetically, and it's Kamisi Cavage. But like I said, four vowels, 20-something consonants, but I got it. You know what I mean? And what that communicated to him, he wrote me a card. He said, nobody's ever really taken the time to know. Really?
Right.
Nobody? Wow. So it's just it's comfortable, listeners, to teach a class, to lead a school, a district from your point of view, right? And based on the experiences you've had growing up, your cultural experiences, and it's easy, it's comfortable, but it's not right, and it doesn't necessarily honor the diversity around us. So do the hard work and honor people.
That's great.
How do you want to be remembered as a school leader, Neil?
I guess I go back to, you know, it's interesting that now it's getting fun. You know, I'm in that fun stage of my career where I feel like, you know, things lessen to make me anxious about, you know, emergencies that come up. And, you know, as I think really about how it's really all about relationships. And so the work, it's not about the work that I want to be noted about. I want it to be about, you know, this guy, you know, picked up the phone, or he called me, or he answered the phone when I had a question. So, you know, really it's about relationships. It's about connecting with people. It's about coaching them up. It's about really making sure that they feel, you know, that they're better themselves, not just professionally, but personally. And that I brought them through. Sometimes I think when people call, they're looking for the answer. And, you know, it's fun not to be able to just answer their question, but to go back and you know, help them to kind of self-reflect on, you know, well, tell me your situation. Tell me your values and belief systems. And as you're talking through them, really what they're looking for is just affirmation sometimes of a decision, a tough decision that they have to make. And they just need somebody else to bounce that off of and feel, I think, more affirmed by that. So I just want to be that person that kind of can help push them to kind of help self-reflect into that part right there. But inspire was, like I said, that one word from last year. I love it. You know, I'm to kind of connect with people. And so the more I can connect with people from not just in my district, but, you know, I love it. People will, I'm meeting with a guy tomorrow. He's coming to my office from another district. And, you know, I said, let's just connect over and let's just talk through it. And, you know, it's not about, well, you know, you're in your district and it's a competition, but how do we help each other out and leverage, you know, the best of what we all know and do.
Absolutely. Neil, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Wow. That's been I go back to I go back to the oldie, but the goodie. I think that it came out, you know, it's the Jim Collins Good to Great. And there was that big movement where everybody read the book when it first came out. And I'll still go back to, because there was a lot of leadership principles that were in that book. Go back and I'll go back and reference it and read it constantly. It's interesting that, you know, like I said, if you've been a leader around that era, you read the book, but young administrators never were in that zone or in that time development of that book. And so they're kind of thinking that it's an old book. But really, I think it was a foundational book at the right time for me as I was kind of going through that. That when I was when I read, you know, books nowadays, I go back and I you know, sometimes kind of reference that they're talking about an aspect of something that, you know, Jim Collins talked about, but I'll still go back and appreciate some of the concepts that he had that drives me.
Yeah, Jim Collins, that is a classic, and definitely anything by him I devour. So been lucky. I've seen him speak a couple of times. He always comes to this event we have that's actually sponsored by my church, but it's not necessarily faith focused. You know, they have pastors there and that's great, but they also have business leaders, and it's really the idea of getting better as a leader. And so that's called the Global Leadership Summit. You could search the blog, my blog, about it and get resources connected to it. But Jim is an amazing thinker when it comes to leadership. Neil, what do you do for fun?
You know, I like to write. I love writing. I love reading. So that, you know, gets me on Twitter to kind of, you know, think about those things. It gets fun. My family will just laugh at just, you know, I'm always taking notes. I'm always typing in notes of things that I frequently want to think about. I just started, you know, January 1, I started getting into more exercising. My wife is a previous personal trainer. So you would think that that would make me more in shape, but that's intimidating. The ego is there. And so my default was not to go run with her or do anything next to her. But I've started getting back into exercising. And
so it sounds like both of us married up. My wife is a ex-college track star. She ran at Dayton and actually won the Athletic 10 some type of sprint. So she could dust me. I always told her I could beat her in a race, but it never happened.
No.
One time, she's a hate that I'm telling this story, but she's a lefty and she plays basketball. And so she's very fast, but and she's decent at basketball, but she has one move, Neil. That's it, one move. And it's to pump fake and then drive left because that's her dominant hand. Now, she was talking crazy smack talk. I mean, out of 10, this was an 11. She was off the charts talking so much smack to me. She did her her fake, drove to the left. And I ended up blocking her shot badly, and I've never been. She's you can say hi to Neil. So this is her right here. Here's Erica.
How you doing?
yeah.
For a first.
I can hear. Yeah. You should know better. Talk some sense.
The right timing.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be good for the listeners. But wow, I got in big time trouble for that one. But she was talking so much smack, so I had to beat her in something, I guess, to make my little self feel good.
Right.
What kind of a workout or what kind of like lift or what do you enjoy?
You know, I found out just this past Friday that, you know, it was ellipticals and machines, weights and things like that. Well, I got into the pool for the first time on Friday.
Nice.
And I think I underestimated, you know, I play in the pool with the kids a lot, but there's a difference between playing and playing in a like hotel pool. And going into like a real pool, they're longer. I'll just remind people if you haven't done this, they are longer than what you might think. And I exercise. I was the only one in the pool, and the lifeguard I think was having this conundrum of how do I like. I think she was starting to take off her flip flops and get ready to jump in. I mean, she had that look of this guy's going to have to make me work for my money. And I got a little afraid because I exercised before that, and you know I didn't realize that. So I did a couple laps. I don't know how to flip turn, and I was worried about it. I don't know how to flip turn, but I'm glad I don't because it gave me a chance to just kind of rest on the side a little bit. But swimming doesn't lie. You know, you can stay on an elliptical, and I could go for a long time, but every muscle was hurting after that.
Yeah, I could believe that one. I was a swimmer in high school, so I know what you mean.
Okay.
Hey, who's a person you'd like to meet, either from the past or the present?
This is like anybody?
Anybody.
You know, I I've never met my great grandpa, my dad's dad and dad's grandpa, but grandpa I think died when I was in high school, but I really didn't have a relationship with him. I didn't see him very often. He was in India, and didn't know the language. And, after now, really, as I grew up and I hear stories about him from my dad and, even to know where my dad is today or how he got here was because of his grandpa who I'd never met. I'd love to be able to, I need a translator, but I would love to actually sit down and talk with them a little bit and kind of get to know them a little bit more.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing. This, you made it, Neil. I'm proud of you. This is the last question. It's a tough one. We talked about it in the pre-chat. But you're building a school from the ground up, Neil. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
So, yeah, and I think it really will come down to one. One priority that I need. And because the others will follow in domino effects. And we kind of talked about them before because obviously you need the community and you need the right things that are around it. But I really come down to leadership. It really comes down to people. So I would really want to, and it's interesting, it's not about a magic number of I want to put all my money in the basket of hiring the most expensive, but really put my time, I guess I need time to go out and find the right leaders, and that we share that same vision. And we talked about that at our last lead up, you know, Voxer group, and Steven Weber talked about the concept of, like, you know, that we're all in our different districts, you know, spread out across the United States for a reason. But you know, we constantly talk about, there are people that go way above and beyond, and I'm not talking about necessarily just time, because I know that, you know, and you know, I want to encourage people that we all went through that with young kids and things, that sometimes we have to be home or we've got after school responsibilities and we got to be out. But really getting relational people, really getting people that are committed. If we could get the leaders in there, then the other stuff falls into it. I was in a district with great looking buildings, and I'm going to tell you that that doesn't have any impact on student achievement. That it looks good, and it may look good to walk in the morning, but I'm telling you that when I know that there's people that care about kids, that's even better. And anything can get solved in that. And I go back to Jim Collins, the litmus test is those level five leaders. Right. And, I thought that I would be able to, when I read his book, I always thought, you know, these are diamonds in the rough, and you find one in a district, or, you know, if that. And I can tell you, I'm working in a district with like 30 or 50 of them. And when that happens, there's so much synergy that can occur. I mean, there's so much work that can be done when people are humble, that people care about the work and not their own name recognition. And it's powerful, because when people are talking about doing things for the right decisions, I can't believe how much people will work above and beyond if they know it's for the right, if it's for the right reasons of impacting kids. So I'm going to put it all into not necessarily money, but time and finding the right team.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's all about. You get the right people on the bus, as Jim Collins would say, and everything else flows from there.
Yep.
So, Neil, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I would say, I'm always available. You know, and again, that's that downfall of you know, not prioritizing, you know, with family being up there close. But, you know, it's something I think that my family, you know, at least gets encouraged by, of knowing that I'm there at least helping people and not just, you know, out there just sitting on the TV set. But, yeah, definitely come contact me. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is DR and then Neil Gupta, NEILGUPTA. And that's the same as my Voxer handle. Definitely get on a Voxer, test that out. I think you'd love it, for anybody that hasn't been on there yet. And you just kind of, it's a walkie-talkie app, and it's a way to kind of talk it with people for a quick question back and forth, or just to kind of get ideas about a certain event or initiative that you're working on. And then, yeah, if we have any questions, you know, we'll go deeper then. We'll set up a Skype, or we'll set up a Google Hangout, and we'll go from there.
Awesome. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Neil. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Neil in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you can tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Neil, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Great, thank you.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.